This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Today we hear from two candidates running for state house. Coming up, Ronald Hawkins, the Libertarian, running in the 63rd District, which includes parts of Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. But first, John Hoadley is in his second term representing the city of Kalamazoo and most of Kalamazoo Township in the state house. In November, voters will decide if the Democrat will get a third term representing the 60th State House District. John Hoadley, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So what would you like to do if you do get another 2 years in the State House?
If voters send me back to the State House and I have the honor and privilege to serve, there's a lot of work that we haven't finished yet that I'd like to get done. You know, for me, I've always talked about a Michigan that invests in people. And I think people are at the point where we want to make sure that we're spending our tax dollars on things that actually benefit people. So let's fix the roads. Let's invest in our schools to actually create smaller class sizes so teachers have the freedom to teach. And instead of spending more money on corporate giveaways or tax cuts to the companies that just have the best lobbyists. So these are things that I would like to get done. A large part of that will depend on what party's in the majority. I'm feeling excited that a lot of voters across the state are hungry for some change and that they're supporting Democratic candidates across the state of Michigan.
So let's start with that fix the roads idea, because there has been some movement there, but there are still people who feel pretty frustrated with what they drive over every day. So what would you want to do to maybe have a more immediate fix to the roads?
Well, we absolutely need to actually fix the roads. A bunch of us a few years ago called out our Republican colleagues for saying that you're putting a Band-Aid on a literal pothole. So when they passed a set of funding measures that was inadequate to fix the job 5-6 years ago, and then said the money won't come for 5 or 6 years in the future, we knew that that was a problem. And the roads have only gotten worse. I appreciate Gretchen Whitmer and her idea for an infrastructure bank, so we actually can create a pool of capital that can then supercharge and immediately fund some projects. I also believe in responsible budgeting. So we have to have an honest conversation. You know, 3-4 years ago, when I introduced an amendment to say that we should charge heavy trucks more, I stand by that. And we need to put more revenue back in the system. We need to take a look at all the ways that we're funding our roads to make sure that we are fairly distributing that. And not putting all the burden on individual drivers like we really did with the Republican plan from a couple years ago. At the end of the day, there's a bunch of work that needs to be done, but we need to make sure then we're prioritizing it in our budget, and that has not happened over the last 4 years.
You mentioned you wanted smaller classrooms in schools. We are speaking on Friday, a day after the State House passed, or a committee, I guess, in the State House passed legislation that said they're going to keep the evaluation standards for school administrators where they're at, so they're not factoring in test scores any more than they have previously. Let me broaden out the question a little bit, though. How should we be evaluating teachers? How should we be evaluating individual schools, school districts? There's a lot of belief that test scores are a far from perfect way to do that. When you're sitting there in Lansing, what sort of things do you look at to say, you know, that's a school that's doing it right, and those are the best practices that might work elsewhere?
I think we need to start by trusting teachers. I trust teachers. I trust parents. And I'm going to ask our students to really lean in and try to, you know, learn. This is a recipe that's worked throughout American history. Recently, though, we've gone to the point where we think that we can measure the success of every student teacher by how well they do on a test. So there's an entire industrial complex that's built around this idea of more testing, more immediate feedback, and that every student's interaction with a teacher can be reduced to some sort of data point. And you know, at the same time, I hear people telling me that they want more testing for accountability for a teacher. And at the same time, we also should have more time in the classroom to take on life teaching skills and give enriching educational opportunities. You know, at some point, we have to say, why don't we make sure that we are investing and raising up teachers, and that we're giving them the professional supports they need and the freedom to teach in their classrooms and be able to then work individually with those students without the fear of being overcrowded and over micromanaged so they can't actually then meet the individual needs of those students. That's sort of the bigger piece conversation that we have to get to. But over the last, since 2010, at least, we keep putting nominally a few more dollars into the school aid fund, and it's not keeping up with the rate of inflation. And beyond that, we also know that we're not adequately funding the needs of our schools based on numerous reports that have come out. So even though we're spending a lot of money in the state of Michigan, it's insufficient to produce the results we want. How do you test that? I mean, part of it, I think, is we should be able, when anyone graduates a Michigan school, they should be able to read well, they should be able to think clearly, they should be able to do basic math, and have a general understanding of how the world works. I mean, these are some of the basic things. So they're ready to enter the workforce or college or skill trades, whatever happens to be next. But that is going back to something that I think a lot of us have to do, which is trusting our schools and our teachers to teach and our parents to be involved in each step of that process.
PFOSs, they've been found in Parchment. They've been found Richland Township, a lot of areas around Southwest Michigan. What's the role for the state here, specifically a state lawmaker, in perhaps examining what the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality is doing and trying to ensure that if these chemicals are in the drinking water, that something is done quickly about that?
Everybody deserves to have clean drinking water. And, the fact that our water is under attack right now from negligence, from Flint to Parchment to counties in between, really shows that that the Republican leadership has been failing in their ability to protect one of the most important pieces of the public good, and that's our clean water. You know, I serve on the Department of Environmental Quality Subcommittee of Appropriations, and that department has been underfunded and under-resourced to actually do the job. And, I was so disappointed earlier this year when my Republican colleagues passed a set of bills that would then even take away some of the ability for the DEQ to deny permits and let polluters and the companies that will benefit from polluting our waters or our air decide if they would like to overturn a denial that's made by the DEQ. So even in a time when we have water crisis, Republicans in the state legislature decided to cede even more control to the people who are polluting our waters. And that is so wrong. You know, we know that there is potentially thousands of sites that have PFAS. And I do want to say I applaud Governor Snyder for now instituting testing in more locations. That's key, right? Because we should be looking towards solutions. But the rubber is going to meet the road at the point where we need to have making sure that we are paying for the PFAS cleanup. And that's going to be asking folks that are known polluters or folks that have some connection to the liability chain at all levels that they've made profits, whether they were making the PFAS chemicals or they were using the PFAS chemicals on their materials when they were selling to the public. They were making a profit. And now their profits has resulted in severe environmental and health damage to the people in Michigan. So they need to pay for that cleanup. And we need to get beyond just having a response, which, by the way, I will say in Kalamazoo County, it was so good to see everybody, regardless of their political party or their level of government, come together and say, we now know there's a problem in Parchment, let's solve it. That was incredible. But we need, as lawmakers, to go beyond that and say, what is the system change that needs to happen? So we need to hold those polluters accountable. We need to be tougher in the standards of our drinking water. I've co-sponsored legislation to actually lower the drinking water standards. And then ultimately, we're going to need to hold polluters.
Lower the drinking water standards. You mean lower the amounts of...
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. The amount of PFAS that is acceptable in drinking water. Yes. and then ultimately, we need to hold polluters accountable and make them pay.
What would you do about auto insurance rates?
I'm on record as supporting the fair and affordable changes to our auto insurance. There's a whole lot of things that we could do, right? Michigan's auto insurance is too high. So, let's start by ending the practice of redlining and discriminatory zip code problems. Let's make sure that we are putting a reasonable fee schedule in on hospitals and other folks so no one is getting, exorbitantly billed because they happen to come in and use a hospital from an auto accident versus, say, an accident in their home. let's also make sure that we demand accountability. So if we're going to have a fraud authority, let's make sure we're cracking down on any sort of user fraud, but also insurance companies that just routinely deny your benefits the first time around just because, and then hoping that you will give up as a consumer. You know, I think there's a whole bunch of pieces that can be done. Actually, and one of my colleagues, Abdullah Hamoud, had a really smart plan where we could change sort of the various thresholds where, you know, essentially we could lower the outstanding liability while actually reducing costs for individuals. But to make this work, it means that we need to have folks willing to come to the table from both the insurance side and the hospital side. And right now, the conversation in Lansing has been very one-sided. You know, we all need auto insurance for our cars. That is absolutely true. And we also need to make sure, though, that when you're buying insurance, you're going to get a product that makes sense. We'd hate for someone to think that they're covered when they go into their hospital, the ER, leave, and then come back, and all of a sudden they find out they're not, which was potentially one of the flaws with what was being proposed last year. But, yeah, you know, when the legislature is working well, we should be able to come together and really hammer out some of the solutions that we all agree on. I'm hoping that after the election, we can get some of that done.
Can we continue to have lifetime benefits in Michigan for people injured in catastrophic auto accidents?
So the MCCA, which is the fund that actually has the catastrophic coverage, is actuarially sound to our best of our knowledge. They also, I will note, though, shield themselves from a lot of transparency in that fund. So we can make sure that we know why any rates are being adjusted over time. But what people don't realize is that, or a lot of folks don't realize, is that there's two parts of your bill. One is the catastrophic coverage, and then one is whatever else your auto insurance wants to cover. And, you know, we all pay the $100-some charge every year for the catastrophic coverage. And that's sound to the best of our knowledge right now. But the question, then, why is the rest of your bill, which can be range from $1,000 in some instances to multiple thousands of dollars, what's driving that cost? And, you know, for a lot of us, we see that there are your zip code and other non-driving factors play a bigger part than it should. So let's take that off the table. Let's put that fee schedule in place so people's bills, the first portion of their bill, isn't getting exorbitantly charged. And I think you'd see a lot of people's insurance start to go down.
So you met your opponent here in Kalamazoo. A bridge joked in a headline, "Hell freezes over," because you took a selfie together and talked about meeting for a beer later. Does this reflect how a civil campaign, where two people with different views on how government should conduct policy, can be run? Or is it, as was remarked in a blog post at the Gong News Service, perhaps with a little bit of snark, it can happen in a state house district where the Democratic candidate won 70 and then 69% of the vote in 2014 and 2016. By the way, not very good years for Democratic candidates, indicating a very safe Democratic district.
I think anybody can have a civil conversation, right? You know, I think about the fact that I've enjoyed meeting Mr. Baker. We did have the beer that we promised. And, you know, we've done a ton of forums together. And, you know, I think he's a great guy. We obviously disagree on policy. But just because you're running in a more competitive seat doesn't mean that our politics need to become divisive. Does not mean that we need to resort to the mudslinging that's coming up in each one of these races. You know, and we're seeing that folks can have be from different sides of the aisle and still get along just fine. But, you know, I would note that we're only going to change it if we start leading by example. So, you know, for folks that are in safer seats, whatever that's considered, you know, I hope that they're being civil. For folks that are in competitive seats, you know, it wouldn't kill you to go have a beer, right? Go meet your opponent, go shake their hand, be able to know who their family is and say, you know, and get to know them, because at the end of the day, it is about serving everybody. And we're not going to do that if we just keep going to Teams Red and Team Blue.
State Representative John Hoadley is seeking a third term in the Michigan House. The Democrat represents the 60th district. That includes the city of Kalamazoo and most of Kalamazoo Township. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.